Health and Fitness with David Hollywood with the all-new Midlands Park Health and Fitness Club, midlandsparkhotel.com.
Midlands 103.
Hello and welcome to the latest hour of our weekly programme. Let's have a look at what's coming up. What is a physical practice that keeps you limber? It has a global community of over 300 million people, and its proponents believe it greatly enhances your awareness both physically and emotionally. Yoga is being given centre stage on Health and Fitness this evening. An expert yoga instructor based in Portlaoise will be in studio very shortly. We'll also be talking about a game nearly all of us will have tried a hand at some point in our lives. Do you have nostalgic memories of playing pitch and putt? Well, the Midlands has a newly elected Vice President of Pitch and Putt Ireland. You'll meet that very Westmeath man who has dedicated his life to the game. And we learn about the helpline that could be a lifeline for someone. Derek Smith from the Male Advice Line will be on the show later. It's probably high time that we featured yoga on Health and Fitness. It's been something that I've been wanting to work towards for quite a bit of time. Very glad to say that joining us in studio this evening is Tara O'Neill from the Vitality Temple in Portlaoise. Tara, thanks so much for coming in to us.
Oh, thank you for having me, David.
Not at all. Yoga is an absolute and utter behemoth of culture, and there's so much in it and behind it, so it's a tricky one to know where to start. We'll be talking all about the Vitality Temple and what goes on there in Portlaoise shortly, but I wanted to first get an idea of your relationship with yoga, how you came to it. When did that start?
I started in my early 30s. I had been into fitness since I was 15. So I was training, teaching, personal trainer, had got into jiu-jitsu, martial arts, and had an injury. So I was sort of a reluctant yogi to start. I loved everything that was fast and anything that was running away from everything. And my first yoga class was quite a strong yoga class. It was an Ashtanga class. I noticed my ego a little bit. You know, I'd come from martial arts and I was probably at my most flexible.
Yeah.
And there was all these little old ladies being able to do stuff I couldn't do. And they're probably about the age I am now. And I struggled in the class itself. And then when I got to the first relaxation, there was this aha moment. And I had never felt that before. I'd never relaxed in my life. You know, I was always running and doing everything fast and being super busy. And when I just lay on the floor and I really did feel myself like merging with the earth, I just like as there was no body. And I just thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to teach this. Is this for free? You know, this is amazing. So
that occurred to you during that first class, the first moment of relaxation after a sequence of stretches?
Yeah.
That must be... Well, you've described it perfectly, like a really affecting and memorable moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I also remember struggling throughout the class. It was an Ashtanga class. And as I said, I was probably at my fittest at that time, around 30. And I was challenged with some of the balances and the poses. And I was half thinking, oh, I don't really like this. But just to go from that to this just state of bliss of just nothingness or something at the end, and that was it. That was the start of the journey for me.
Ashtanga is a particular type of yoga that is challenging. It would be for more, say, seasoned or practiced yoga people.
I would say so. You know, with no injuries.
Okay. So you had this moment. You then realized that this is something I want to do, or that you want to have in your life. What happened after that?
That's it. Straight away, I started looking into training courses, but I realized then I had to do a little bit of more practice before I could get on to a teacher training. But that's what I knew. I knew from that first day that I was going to teach it. I was already teaching fitness, but I thought this, other people need to know about this.
Mm.
I'm not saying it's all easy, but yeah, that's what spurred me on.
And things that deliver us great benefit often have an element or of difficulty and progression built into it. That's what it's all about, the journey of developing yourself, your body and your mind. So you realise then that this is something that you wanted to do. I find it interesting as well. So you would have been a very fit person.
Yeah.
and physically relatively well-rounded if you're doing things like both jiu-jitsu and running. So what physical benefits or psychological benefits did you notice when you got into yoga regularly? What was it conferring upon you that you were like, oh, this is new, I feel different in this way?
It didn't take long before I noticed old bad habits started to drop off.
Okay, like what?
Well, you know, well, people, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I'm a vegetarian, but at the time I would have been pescatarian, and I would never been a great drinker. I would try, but I'd get hangovers, but all of a sudden I just couldn't do it anymore. It's not like I tried to do it because I was doing yoga. It's just one drink would give me a hangover before I'd even gone to sleep. So I just noticed I started to drop off, you know, old bad eating habits. Even my friendship group started to change. I noticed that maybe I didn't enjoy gossiping as much, you know. So I definitely, what I was doing internally was being reflected on my outside world. It started to change slowly.
So there was a mindset shift, and that was really perceptible after a certain amount of time.
Very much so.
That's fascinating.
Very much so.
As I said, yoga is this enormous entity that so many people are participants of and supporters of today. But when you were getting into it, it was very much in a growth phase in this country in comparison. Talk to us about the kinds of how different today is compared to when you started, and what that journey's been like to observe from your perspective.
Oh, it's just changed. It made a complete turnaround. And it's a good thing. But I know when I started, I was thirsty for more information. And there wasn't very much information. There was no YouTube, you know? You know? I mean, can people even imagine a world without YouTube now? But like, just as a student, but then when I went on to become a teacher, even just finding new sequences, as I remember going to the library and finding a 1970s book on yoga, like just to get information was so hard. And at that stage, we didn't even have great teachers coming over giving lectures, you know.
Yeah.
They started to come in. So I'd say maybe around 2010, you started to see a big shift, and you'd see teachers, great teachers coming in, delivering workshops. And at that stage, you know, YouTube was up and running and you're getting more and more information. So we definitely, as yoga teachers, were given very little initially. But there's a lot of information out there now, which is a good thing and a bad thing.
Talk to us about how it's a bad thing.
I suppose the bad thing is there can be a bit overwhelming for people. Mm. Like when I first was able to, I remember paying for premium content on, you know, and I really valued that content.
Yeah.
And I spent time sort of really absorbing it. But there's perhaps is so much now that people don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
If you wanted to follow YouTube for classes, who do you go to? And then you're maybe, I suppose it's a little bit like the dating world now. Like, you could be on a class, but you think there might be something better. You know,
That's such a good point. Will you stick to it?
Yeah.
Yeah. A choice can be a real dilemma in and of itself.
Yeah.
So the amount of available information regarding yoga has exploded, of course. Mm-hmm. The amount of people practicing yoga has presumably done likewise. So have you noticed demographically, like a shift in the kind of person that practices yoga from the 90s to today? Is it a case that anyone from any walk of life could walk into your studio these days?
Yeah, 100%. I'm actually teaching for LOETB as well at the moment. Mm. And they're sending me out into different community groups. And it's just amazing to see how open, you know, people are of all ages to yoga.
You speak about the mindset shift you experienced when you got into yoga, and it's well known about how it has a mindfulness piece to it. We live in a world that's pretty sedentary, and so much of it exists online. The psychological benefits of engaging with yoga, I imagine, are more important today than they ever have been in the past, considering the contrast they offer to what our normal lifestyle is.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%.
Okay. Yeah. So what is it about how yoga works that has that dynamic?
Well, for me, the true essence of yoga isn't about the physical movement, but the physical movement draws you into it. Mm. It's about awareness. So the physical practices, you start to become more bodily aware, which leads you to meditation. So the true meaning of yoga is meditation.
Okay, so you would meditate as well as practice yoga?
Yeah, that's a huge part of my practice.
And people who teach yoga, would you think typically are people who practice mindfulness meditation as well?
I would say a large quantity, yeah.
Okay. The Vitality Temple is based in Port Leash. We're going to learn all about what's available there, how it's grown, and some of the really interesting classes that take place there very shortly indeed. Stay with us.
Health and fitness with the all-new Midlands Park Health and Fitness Club, where relaxation meets rejuvenation. Find out more at midlandsparkhotel.com. Midlands
103. Welcome back. Tara O'Neill from the Vitality Temple in Port Leash joins us. We are talking about yoga. The Vitality Temple, Tara, is where you practice and teach yoga. I believe it's where you also teach people how to teach yoga?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So we'll talk about that at some juncture as well. But the classes themselves, what's on offer if someone listening this evening wanted to engage with yoga for the first time, come back to it after a long time away from it? What have you got on offer at the Vitality Temple?
Well, I teach like a mixed level yoga flow. So that's open to from beginners to advanced students. And I sort of blend a few different types of yoga into that. So it covers a bit of somatic yoga, a bit of yoga flow. And then we move down into sort of a meditation at the end or relaxation. I would teach aerial yoga, pole, beginner's pole fitness.
Okay, so that stands out as being just immediately different to what you're talking about there. Pole fitness is another really growing popular physical activity. Mm-hmm. What is it about pole fitness that motivated you to bring it into the overall catchment of what you practice at the Vitality Temple?
I think because I started out in fitness.
Yeah.
Like I started out in fitness over 30 years ago. And I love fitness, but I've moved away from the gym myself. Mm. Like I was a gym rat for many, many years. And now I think after I started teaching aerial yoga and getting into aerial yoga, that sort of drew me away from the gym. And so I like to bring in these quirky classes that are fun, but there's a big fitness element in it as well.
Yeah. From what I understand, it's physically exerting.
Yeah, challenging.
Yeah.
Challenging. I like that.
In a positive
challenge.
Way. Yeah, absolutely. aerial yoga, that has me completely flummoxed. Talk us through what that is.
Okay, so aerial yoga, even though it has yoga in its name, it's, you know, there's a slight element of yoga in it, but it's a fusion. So you're using the silk hammocks that are attached to the ceiling.
Yeah.
It's a fusion of Pilates, acrobatics, dance, yoga and fitness all combined together. And you get to, it's amazing because I have people all the way from 3 to 70 in my class. I teach in Port Leash, I would teach semi-private and private classes.
Sure.
But from their first class, I'm having people flip for the first time in their lives, even at 70.
That's unreal. So, because I was going to ask you, do you have people at the higher age range managing to do this kind of zero gravity stuff?
Yeah.
It goes to show then, if we mentally commit to learning these things, we kind of always can.
100%. I mean, and that is so empowering. Like, it's a fun class, but I think there's so much development from just being in the class, trusting yourself as well. But from the very first class, because you're supported by the hammock and there's techniques, there's just amazing stuff you can do from the beginning. But we can advance that over time as well.
Sounds kind of scary. I presume it's pretty safe. You have a good safety record with it and all that.
Yeah, all survivors so far.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is very, very safe. There's a trust element in it as well. So trusting yourself, trusting the hammock, trusting the studio. There's a big, you know, there's a lot of breakthroughs in the classes. And it is a lot of fun as well.
From a teaching perspective, those breakthroughs must be one of the best parts of what you do when you see it on people's faces.
And it's amazing. It really is. Yeah, it is. I love introducing people to things that they think they can't do.
Mm.
And then take pictures of them.
Yeah.
I'm always about taking pictures, you know, and go and show your friends, look what you've done. Because you can see people come out, they might be a little bit nervous coming in. And then you're like, wow.
That's so cool.
It's incredible what you can do.
How long has the Vitality Temple been in Portlaoise?
I moved during the pandemic, so I would have set up business in January 22.
Okay, and you had been teaching yoga for a long time prior to that as well.
Yeah, I've been in the business since 1993, and I set up Vitality Holistic, which was the Mead branch, yeah, in 2005. So I've had the studio, and I've run other fitness studios in the meantime as well.
And how has things gone in Portlaoise since you've gotten up and running there?
It's been great. I forget that I'm quite new, you know, because my daughter's been living in Portlaoise 11 years before me. But yeah, the Portlaoise people have really embraced it.
Brilliant.
And of course, I'm teaching with LOETB as well as doing my own classes. So yeah, I'm busy, which is great.
That's cool. Yeah. The teaching of people how to teach, this is a really interesting, I think, subset aspect of teaching. You're giving people the framework and the gift to be able to pass on the gift of what you are passionate about. So personally, do you get a high level of satisfaction from doing that? And as a follow on, how does it work?
Hugely.
Okay.
Hugely. And I think that's, if you were to look in the future to see where I'm going, that's what I'll eventually just be doing is, you know, when I start to stop teaching personally myself. But this is my ninth, I'm just coming up to my ninth yoga teacher training now, that starts next month. And yeah, it's lovely to see, and especially on social media, following all of these teachers now with their students and them setting up. It's amazing.
The practice of teaching someone how to teach yoga, how does it practically work? Do you need to have people need to have a certain base level of expertise before they can then start moving on to teaching it?
I would say a base level. I think people might get a little bit confused about whether they need to be able to perfect poses, the physical side of it, because I think maybe possibly from some different teacher trainings you may have to. But with my teacher training, it's a lot more about the teaching and about your own sort of personal development. So we really focus on the yoga philosophy side of it.
Yeah.
And then teaching skills, but also like we dive deep. It's a real personal journey, you know,
okay,
observing yourself and yoga. It's not all nice pink fairy lights. It can be pretty difficult when you develop awareness and realize that you're responsible for your own happiness.
Yeah. That's the key piece from what we're talking about this evening is yoga and awareness.
Yeah.
And our journey to developing our own awareness. And that brings us with it, as you say, not just enlightenment, but challenges as well when you come across realizations that you have to process, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what we do during the teacher training. We sort of start to look at that and delve a little bit deeper, journaling throughout the time as well. And usually people come up with, or students have some resistance during the training too. There'll be points where there might be stuff that comes up that you don't really want to deal with.
Yeah.
And then there's that support group around it, you know, for you. We always say like the students that are training with you, they're your tribe. You know, they're here to do that work with you.
I was going to ask you, how would you describe the yoga community in a few words? And it sounds like tribe isn't a bad starting point. And it sounds like it's a collegiate and supportive environment.
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. Definitely. And I would say, yeah, it's your tribe. They're there for you. I mean, there's a lot of tears that sometimes it's like a big group therapy session. But it's only with that. And when you start to get that little bit of freedom within yourself and those little realizations that you want to go and share that and teach other people.
And that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
So power to you on that and
Thank
into
you.
The future. In terms of the future, the classes continue apace, and the teaching of the teachers continues as well. That's your world for the foreseeable?
Yeah. So at the moment, I've got the yoga teacher training. I'm in the midst of a meditation teacher training at the moment. Next month, I have the sound healing teacher training. So, yeah, more teacher trainings.
Fantastic. Yeah. And for listeners to health and fitness here on Midlands 103, if, like I said, they are thinking of engaging with yoga for the first time or considering coming back to it after some period away from it, the Vitality Temple is very much happy to have new class members. How would they find the Vitality Temple?
Absolutely. Vitality.ie is my main website. You'll get me on all the socials, Vitality Tara on Instagram, Vitality Tara Vitality O'Neill on Facebook.
Okay.
And I'm on TikTok as well, Vitality Tara.
Tara O'Neill from the Vitality Temple in Portlaoise, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, big thanks to Tara for coming in. When you rejoin me, you'll meet a man who spent his life in dedication to the game he loves.
Health and fitness with the newly refurbished Midlands Park Health and Fitness Club. Refresh your fitness journey with dedicated personal trainers on hand to help you achieve your goals. Find out more at MidlandsParkHotel.com. Midlands
103. Next on the programme, I want you to meet a man who's dedicated his life to a sport. Not just a sport, but also his local community and the broader community that has developed and existed around the sport of pitch and putt for a very long time. Davey Redden is in studio with us. Davey has been elected to the position of National Vice President of Pitch and Putt Ireland, and he's the first Athlone man to take the role. Davey, very welcome into the studio, and a hearty congratulations.
Thank you, David. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. So talk to us about this particular ascension to this particular role. It must be an honour for someone who is so steeped in pitch and putt in this country to be the Vice President of Pitch and Putt Ireland.
Oh, indeed it is. I am very, very passionate about pitch and putt. I've been involved in it a long, long time. It's only when I look back at it now that I didn't realise it's over 50 years that I've since I started playing and gone through the administration roles. I didn't just come in as an outsider to the Vice President's role. I've been with the National Executive Committee, which is the governing body, since 2012, where I took up the first role of the PRO. And then I moved down the way a small bit, just in terms of how the officers are rated, down to Leinster Competition Secretary, which I held for 8 years. I had a terrific subcommittee working with me, which we got a bit of camaraderie back into the game, a bit of enjoyment back into, a bit of laughing going on. There was also the serious factor as well for the players participating. I enjoyed every minute for that 8 years. Recently I was stepped up to National Competition Secretary for a 2 year period, and I followed in some very fine footsteps, the likes of Liam Sherry from St. Bridget's and Miles McMurrough from Lakeside. And it didn't change. It was very the same as just being at the Leinster level with the subcommittee I had there as well, were brilliant. And then to eventually get the Vice President, which very, very proud of that no other Athlone man had gone that far. I did do 3 attempts before that and came very close. I often heard the story, like, third time lucky, but I had to go a 4th time. And we got it on the 4th one. We got it by a majority of 14 votes from a colleague of mine from the Lucan Club in Dublin.
Very good.
Words can't describe, to be honest, as I said that day in my acceptance speech, words can't describe the feeling of being Vice President of Pitch and Putt. Maybe because of the sport that it is, I know it's possibly not up there with the top 6 maybe in the country of your rugby and your soccer and your Gaelic and all that, but people have to play a different sports, and that's what makes it so competitive and so enjoying, that everyone goes a different route rather than all go the one way.
And there's huge value in a sport being open and accessible to all in the way that pitch and putt is, but it's also
brings so many different aspects into the fold, be it your fitness or your psychological sharpness and so on. And we can talk all about that very shortly, and we'll talk about your hopes and aspirations for the time that you're in the role as vice president as well. But I wanted to pick you up on something you mentioned at the start there, which was over 50 years involved in pitch and putt. What is it about the sport of pitch and putt that has seen you put so much of your life into it?
That's a very good question. I've enjoyed it that much. When you say fitness, like 36 holes, it takes an average of an hour and a half maybe to play 18 holes. And if you play it, you enjoy it. You go out there to enjoy it. There's always the competitive level of it later on down the line. But I go out there to enjoy it. If I play well, I play well. If I play bad, I don't get annoyed and go home in a bad mood. I still enjoy it. And it just... I don't know. I can't express the words the way it got to me. I was out in the fresh air. It rained like it does 90% of the time in Ireland, and you had your wetsuit to stick on you so you could still play. I know that probably a farcical thing that you could look for, that you would one day have a pitch and putt course that's actually covered in. Mm. I don't know if that'll ever happen. Maybe somebody, benefactor, might come along and do it at some stage. But it's just a total... meeting of people, being out there in the fresh air, as I say, and getting the fitness level. You are fit for the 36 holes. And then you can be competitive as well. So it kind of takes two tones into a game while you're playing.
And in terms of competition, you competed with great success, particularly as a young pitch and putt player. Actually, I mean, like looking through your pitch and putt playing bio, you competed in a great level of competition all the way through the time that you played the sport. Talk us through your own personal highlights from like your perspective.
Yeah, I became juvenile player of the year at the Athlone GA Pitch and Putt Club in 1976, I think it was. My dad introduced me to the game. He okay. used to bring me down with him because we lived on the Sumpson Road, and it was only about 10 or 15 minutes walk. So you got exercise all the way down to the Athlone GAA. I went on the on the committee at 16 years of age as the juvenile officer. I did, unfortunately, I qualified for a couple of Leinster competitions where you have to go through your qualifying rounds within your region to get to these provincial championships.
Sure.
I qualified for three of them. I also qualified for three nationals. I think probably the highlight of the national ones was for an intermediate. I was playing an intermediate grade at the time. I led the intermediate national championship after the first round with a score of 49 on the Douglas course down in Cork.
That must have been such a thrill.
Oh, I didn't wake up until the second round was over. It got me that quick. But possibly in the other aspects to that, in Custrum, my own hometown club, which is run very professionally, and there's always somebody on hand to help you out there as regards. It's a full championship course. I had the pleasure of designing that years ago when it opened. It was the old rugby grounds years ago, which is now the Bounty, is where that is, if anyone knows where it is in Athlone. That used to be a 9-hole pitch and putt course belonging to the Army. So they did a swap. And we got tools to go out and build a course. I designed the course there along with the late Leo Flanagan. And even the thrill of that, and John Kelly was with me as well, but unfortunately John passed away before the venture was finished. But it opened in 1994 and it has grew and grew and grew every year since. There's a Scratch Cup coming up, and I'll get the plug in when I think about it.
Absolutely,
there's a Scratch Cup coming up on Saturday. It's in memory of my mum and dad. And it is possibly one of the biggest majors that they have during the course of the year. Myself and my family from Fire Drum sponsor it every year. I'm looking forward to that. I'm going out to play in it, so hopefully it'll be a good day all round. 2009 was probably the best year I had as regards to playing side of things. I got the Player of the Year in Custrum, and I also won the county stroke play and match play in the 1 year. I also worked with the Westmeath County Board for 28 years, where when I retired from that, I finished up as the team manager of the Westmeath inter-county team.
They led them to quite a bit of success.
Yes,
as well.
I led them to two places. They finished runner-up in Leinster, and the best place I brought them to was fifth place.
Nationally, wasn't it?
Nationally.
Yeah.
And that itself was a thrill because you get players from all around the provinces as regards, or the county as regards. There was five clubs in Westmeath. So you ran your trials and you got your pick from the players that participated in the trials.
And you're coming up against, presumably, counties of a completely different makeup and pitch and putt clubs with different resources
I think at that time, down at Larkspur Park when we brought them to fifth, Cork were going for their 10th inter-county championship in a row. And they are nearly nowadays, they're getting a little bit closer as regards competition at national level, but you can nearly pick yourself. If you had a little side bet, you could nearly say yourself who's going to finish first, second and third, or who will be.
Look, it's the way a lot of sport plays out in this country because of population base and resource and that type of thing. Davey, what you've described to us there really is a life lived through pitch and putt and dedicated to the sport and the people who play it as well, to support them and bring them into the fold. You mentioned living on Assumption Road, which of course gives you that understanding and background with the Defence Forces and all of that. So alongside playing pitch and putt, bringing the sport to a higher prominence and helping it exist within the Defence Forces was a big part of your life as well.
Oh yes, I'm a very proud man to have served 43 years for my country. I followed in my dad's footsteps. He was the CS of the Army Band in Athlone Barracks.
Okay.
I did 43 years. I've just retired 2 years ago. In 2000, I got word from Dublin that they used to have what they call a sporting calendar.
Yeah.
And all the different sports was on it. And because of the fact that they said there wasn't enough interest in pitch and putt, they were going to remove it. In 2001, I went up to a meeting with a sports officer in HQ in Dublin, and I took up the role of Defence Forces Chairman, which I had for 10 years. I got pitch and putt back on the calendar, maybe not as high up as I anticipated, but it got back up there. I had a representative in each of the barracks that was playing as my coordinator, and we had tremendous success all the way through. I think we got so successful at one stage that we did at the time make an application to Central Council to put an army team into the inter-county championships.
Oh, that would have been cool.
And they wouldn't let us.
Yeah.
They wouldn't let us at the time because of the fact that there were so many players from around the country that were playing on the inter-county teams anyway, and these were army guys.
Yeah.
So, you always have aspirations of maybe if we did get them together, what would they have done?
Well, look, and that's vision for you at the end of the day. You know, if you can't think outside the box, then these kinds of potential things will never happen anyway. So it's always worth knocking on the door and trying in that respect.
We knocked on the door, all right.
You sound like a man who's knocked on a few doors over the years.
I'd say that I would only hope that, when I decide to retire, that I've left a legacy there that will continue for many, many, many years to come. I see it growing and growing and growing, and I see where some counties are way ahead of others, maybe just kind of close that little band a small bit.
Okay, so let's talk about what life will be like for you as you're in the Vice President's role and maybe aspiring to the presidency of Pitch and Putt Ireland. The objectives that you would immediately like to see taking place in pitch and putt in this country. You mentioned there growing the sport and maybe making its growth a bit more even across the country. What does that look like for you? Is it like increasing membership specifically?
Yeah, that would be the main focus, increasing the memberships. You don't need golf is a classic game too.
Mm.
But you'll play a game of golf in 4 hours. You have 14 clubs. Sometimes to get from tee box to tee box, you need a buggy.
Yeah.
You have possibly the professional lads on the circuit. You can never see anyone without a caddy. Mm. You have three clubs in pitch and putt. The tee box is the longest shot you'll have is 70 metres, which is about 100 yards, I think. And, people will go on and still have their golf for enjoyment. I'm not ruling that or knocking that at all. But pitch and putt, possibly, as some elderly lads used to say in Athlone GAA years ago, they used to say to me, oh, well, a golfer, a pitch and putt fella can go from pitch and putt to golf, but a prolonged or prolonged golfer can't come back to pitch and putt.
I'd also add to that, like, I can't afford to become a habitual golf player, both for time and for money. But for pitch and putt, I can go to the course here in Tullamore a few times when I have free weekends with a friend. And there's no better way to spend your time. You are. It's a social expression as well as a physical one, and it's accessible to everybody.
Correct.
People, children can play it with their parents, and they can walk up the road, rent a couple of clubs for next to nothing, and be really honing genuine body skills and mind skills.
Yeah, because at the moment, as regards coaching, there's oceans of accessible for coaches. There's you have to be active. There's many level one coaches who haven't been active over a period of time. There's two coaches at the moment. One of them actually is our president, Mark Cahan, and the other one is Stephen Enniquist. And they're always available to give instruction. And any youngsters, I know what I think what's wrong with most of the youngsters as regards pitch and putt, there's too much out there as regards football.
Okay.
Rugby.
Yeah.
Camogie. Hurling. That's their prerogative if they go that way. But it's not expensive. Like, I think at the moment out in Custrum, the membership for a lady and gent starts off at €90 for the year.
I mean, there's nearly no membership fee for anything that costs that little.
And it's entirely up to the person themselves if they want to become competitive or they want to play it for enjoyment.
Yeah.
It's entirely up to themselves. There's no obligation put on them. Or there's no, oh, you have to go and play in that competition, or you have to go on this. But one thing, when I was growing up and gone into the competition side of things, I was told, if you don't go out there and compete, you're never going to improve. You know, you get a handicap when you start off, which is, we'd say, a junior you normally start off in. And then you're every player, his motive is to get down as low as he can get to, that he's able to play. But there is others that want to get down to the top. You know, and they want to win their national title, and they want to, fair play to them.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty about it, that all these types of people's memento and things that they want to do is all involved in the game.
And that speaks with great credit to the sport of pitch and putt, and Davey Redden, the way in which you speak about the sport is a great credit to pitch and putt as well. We wish you the best going forward as Vice President of Pitch and Putt Ireland, and we thank you for coming in to talk to us today.
No problem at all, David, and thank you very much to the station for having me. I appreciate it. And I wish all the players coming up on Saturday the very, very best of Irish luck.
Yeah, the best of luck
to
them. Cheers. That was Davey Redden and Pitch and Putt Ireland. The Male Advice Line offers support to men experiencing domestic, sexual or gender-based abuse, and they're expanding their services in the Midlands. We speak to them next.
Health and fitness with the newly refurbished Midlands Park Health and Fitness Club. Take the plunge in a new routine with our swimming pool, plunge pool, jacuzzi, sauna and steam room. For more, visit MidlandsParkHotel.com. Midlands
103. Throughout your life, you will hopefully traverse the many ups and downs of that without needing to reach out directly for help. But for many of us, a helpline can ultimately become a lifeline. One of those lines that are available to all of us is the Male Advice Line. I'm very glad to say from the Male Advice Line and Men's Network, Derek Smith joins us as they announce they're widening their services and they'll have a client support staff on the ground in the Midlands. Derek, thanks very much for talking to us on Health and Fitness this evening.
Thank you, David. Thanks for having me.
So I've kind of given an allusion to what Male Advice Line is there for at the start of our introduction there. You might talk us through specifically what the service is.
Yeah, so the service was set up to provide support for male victims of domestic abuse. And what we do is we give emotional support and practical advice. And that emotional support, in my experience, is crucial, David, because over 50% of men don't tell anybody what their experience has been. So, you know, we get quite a lot of calls from men who have never spoken about this before to anyone. So, like that, half hour, three quarters of an hour for how long it takes, just to listen to somebody, listen to their experience, make sure that they feel they've been heard and understood and validated. And that's the first step.
Okay. And the service itself, if somebody was to call the male advice line, who would they be speaking to?
Well, the six of us on the line are actually qualified counsellors, but the service, the male advice line is not a counselling service. We have 8 free sessions of counselling available if somebody wishes to avail of them after the call, and that's face-to-face or online.
Okay, very good. And when it comes to this announcement of the expansion, you must, working within the service, know where you need more resources and therefore be very happy to see these coming.
Well, it's absolutely brilliant for us to be able to say that we've covered the 26 counties now with client support workers. You know, the service has grown since it opened in 2018. There was only 4 of us, I think, on the line starting off, and there was no client support workers on the ground. Now we have 6, as I say, qualified counsellors on the line, and we have 10 client support workers on the ground. So it's great to be able to say it, and as I say, it's great to be able to offer this service, you know, to people, not just male victims, but to anybody that might want some information or is concerned about someone that they can call us.
And that's,
the support is here.
And that's an important point as well, Derek, is that the male advice line isn't just for men to use. If a relative or a friend or a loved one of somebody who's believed to be suffering, be it through domestic abuse or something along those lines, is concerned, they can call this line as well for advice.
Absolutely. Yeah, we welcome those calls, you know, from, as I say, family members. I mean, we have had plenty of calls from mothers, sisters, friends, you know, who are concerned or might be concerned about a loved one. And, you know, it's great to be able to offer the service to them as well and give them advice maybe on what to do and what not to do.
Yeah. At the end of our chat, I'll give out the number again. But just since we're on it, it is 1800-816-588, the national free phone number for the service. Derek, you've been with this male advice line service from the start. How did you end up doing this?
Good question. I suppose when I qualified as a counsellor, I was looking, somebody called me and they said that they were looking for counsellors to be on this line, and I thought it would be a very, very interesting and challenging work. So then I contacted the organisation, the Men's Development Network, and one thing led to another, and I'm here 6 years later.
How do you find it then, the work itself? You said that you would expect it to maybe be fascinating, interesting, maybe challenging. How have things transpired in that respect?
It is very challenging work at times because no two cases are the same, and each case has to be taken on its own merits. And, you know, this type of life situation, David, is not simple. And, like, you know, we're very experienced and we have a lot of expertise in this area, and we know it's not simple. It can be very complex. So I'd like, you know, to get that message out there as well, that we fully understand the nature of domestic abuse and how complex it can be.
The work that you do, it must bring you through a process whereby you learn bits and pieces about humanity every day that you work. And as you say there, life can be so complex and have so much emotional dynamic to it that no one day is probably the same in your line of work.
No, that's true. That's true. But like we have, the organisation itself is very, very supportive. I mean, like with we have meetings on a weekly basis, and we have regular supervision, and so we know, like, you know, how to look after ourselves, and we know the importance of self-care and boundary. And we're not under any illusions, David, either. We know, like, there are times when, you know, we have to say, well, that's as much as I can do, and we have to accept that.
Yeah, I imagine there's a skill in itself of handling the stresses and the workload and the psychological challenges of the work that you do. But the work that you do for Male Advice Line is offering a crucial helpline. And as I said at the start of the chat, you never know just how important that first conversation could be. So if you're listening and you feel affected by any of the issues that have came up here, you can call the National Free Phone Service on 1800 816 588. Once again, that is 1800 816 588. The Male Advice Line is free to call, and Male Advice Line are adding client support staff across the country, seven regions including the Midlands, the West, Northwest, Northeast, Dublin, Wicklow, Kildare, Southeast and Southwest. Derek, we thank you for joining us on Health and Fitness this evening, and we wish you and your colleagues every success moving forward with Male Advice Line as well.
Thanks a million, David, and thanks again for giving us the space to have the chat, yeah?
Yeah, that's another week in the bag. A big thanks to everyone who joined us on the show. The best of luck to Tara O'Neill with her teaching of the yoga teachers and everything beyond. Thanks to Davey Redden for coming in to talk to us about pitch and putt, and to Derek Smith, who we just heard from Male Advice Line. I'll be back next week.